Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
This is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com, and I'm here with the head of hoops, Mr. Aaron Beach, and we are here at the Kraken Iceplex. This is kind of middle ground for us. Me being in Ballard and you in Linwood, we kind of decided to meet in the middle and have a sandwich and talk a little Washington hoops to kind of put a cap on the season and kind of what went right, what went wrong, and Mike Hopkins trying to kind of get this thing reestablished for him. Beach, just generally speaking, because I know you've kind of been looking at this thing from afar and going to a few games here and there and whatnot. What do you think is kind of the general assessment of the program? Do you think as fans, should they be encouraged, or do you think that they still fall short?
That's a loaded question. So two things. First of all, I don't think I can I can't remember ever being more entertained by a 500 ball club, at least as far as college basketball is concerned. So I have really enjoyed, thoroughly enjoyed watching those guys play, right? And from a reestablishing a culture perspective, I think Hopkins and crew did an amazing job of getting things back on track, somewhat. At the same time, they ruined the season, you know, early last year, right? And basically in November or December. And so from that perspective, you know, the season was a loss, right? And even though they improved over the season before, I mean, they were a 13-11 team, right? You know, is that our new bar, right? In my opinion, Washington is certainly do a whole lot better than that.
Yeah, but to go from 5 wins to 17 wins, I mean, you know, more than tripling, you know, your output and things like that. I mean, is it reasonable that fans should have expected a potential tourney berth somewhere, even NIT? Or do you feel like this year was still going to be a step in the right direction and ultimately one that they did take?
No, you and I had long pods at the start of the season. I was pretty emphatic that I thought this was a team that was built to contend. At the downside, I guess, was that it took too long to gel. And that's what happens, I think. That's the price you pay when you build your team in the portal rather than from recruiting. And so on one hand, the talent was amazing. I think it was kind of not a once-in-a-decade type of haul that they got that allowed them to be, you know, to improve 8 games. I don't think they can duplicate that. I don't think that's going to happen again. So my question, I guess, is whether or not Washington did enough to restore the foundation of the program to carry that over, you know, into this next season and moving down the road.
Okay. Well, ultimately, leading on that one, where do you think they ultimately fell short?
Well, another thing we talked long and hard about was where this team's warts were coming into the season and the guys that needed to increase their productivity, that were really the keys to the season. We thought that they were going to be really inconsistent shooting the ball, and they were as bad as we expected from that perspective. But I think we also, you and I both talked a lot about CM Bay. You know, he was kind of the guy that we looked to that had shown really a lot of improvement shooting the ball, right? Yeah. And so we thought he was going to be a big factor, and he just wasn't.
Yeah.
So I think that they couldn't afford to have the one or two guys that could shoot the ball, you know, not do it on a consistent basis. So to me, that was it, because they had an elite defense. even though statistically speaking, and we were just looking at the numbers,
yeah.
they finished, you know, near the bottom in terms of scoring defense,
yeah.
both three-point and field goal.
Yep.
But at the same time, you saw that's where stats clearly were lying to us because we know how effective at creating turnovers and opportunities that defense was.
Yep.
So I loved that. That reminded me of the old days. Absolutely did, and I hope that we continue to see that down the road because that's absolutely the right blueprint, at least defensively, for what Hopkins does.
Yeah, and you mentioned a guy like Jamal Bey. He goes from leading the league in three-point percentage last year, shot 28% in league this year.
Yep.
I mean, that's, you know, when you need a guy to step up and the exact opposite happens,
yep.
you know, it's almost in some ways they were able to succeed in spite of some of the players really struggling or just not being able to reach their potential. Let's talk about some of the reasons why you think they are really, really close to being that team that, you know, I don't know if people thought that they necessarily would have been an NIT type team, but Washington State made the NIT and they're not that far away from Washington State.
Yeah. Well, the lack of balance with Washington was ultimately what did them in. You can't have Terrell Brown, who's the best player in the conference, you know, and then your next best guy's scoring 12 points a game, then you don't have any other double-digit scorers.
Right.
I mean, that's the first thing. So they were completely dominated by Terrell's brilliance.
Yeah.
They don't share the ball at all, and they're losing their best, you know, assist guy in Terrell Brown, so they're losing half their assists for next season, and they were the worst team at that in the conference this year. So I don't think they're that close. I don't think next season, unless they, you know, make magic in the portal, that there's any way they can improve, at least from a record perspective, going into next season.
Well, but that said, did we expect Terrell Brown to be the leading scorer in the Pac-12 and leading steals guy in the Pac-12 going into the season? I don't remember us predicting that at all.
No, not at all. We thought he was going to be dynamic, and there was a lot of national buzz just on, hey, this guy's actually going to do some things.
If anything, I thought that there was going to be a lot more balance between him and Dejon scoring-wise. And as you've rightly pointed out, it turned out to be completely one-sided.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I loved what Emmett Matthews was able to do. He definitely was probably, I would say he's the most improved. We saw his shot was consistently improving towards the end of the season. So he was knocking down three-pointers and added that to his game. But overall, they're just, you know, this was a team not, they were only go as far as they did. And I don't think that there's a lot of, based on what's still in the roster currently, I don't see any real... That's not true. I see a little bit of upside, but I certainly don't see NCAA tournament upside.
Yeah. But from an objective viewpoint, and I know that's hard to do, when you go from a team that had four Pac-12 wins last year to 11 this year, it's still the second most that a Mike Hopkins team has ever had since he's been here.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still tough to say, nope, there's still no light at the end of the tunnel? Or can you give some optimism to fans out there?
Well, they didn't beat anybody who was any good. So, you know.
Including Oregon, including Colorado?
Yeah, those are middling teams. They
right.
certainly
I mean, they're NIT
any,
teams. Yeah. They beat right. the three Pac-12 teams that are in the NIT. They beat them all.
Right.
But you're right. They didn't beat any of the teams in the NCAA tournament. They didn't beat any of them.
Right.
The only one that they beat that I'm aware of is South Dakota State.
Yeah.
And that might arguably be their best win of the entire season.
Absolutely was. And that was when
they looked good doing
ball.
It.
Yeah. Yep. So, but at the same time, you're losing most of your production from that team who did, you know, was very average ultimately. So,
yeah.
Do I see light at the end of the tunnel currently? It's got to come from the portal. I like the guys that they're bringing in, but they're more long-term contributors. I think it's going to take time to develop. They're all 150 pounds, dripping wet, right?
Yeah.
They're little guys. They're all beam poles.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time just to physically mature to this point.
Yeah.
They need a point guard in the worst way, right? They need a veteran point guard out of the portal because that guy's not on the roster currently at all.
Right.
And I guess they badly need a contributor in the post, right? They need a rim defender. And unless Roberts comes back,
right,
they don't have that either. So they've got a lot of holes to fill.
I was just going to say, you mentioned Nate Roberts, and obviously there's a handful of 50-50 guys that have the chance to come back, whether you're talking about him, you're talking about Bay, talking about Riley Sorn, talking about Emmett Matthews, who we expect to be back.
Yep.
But who are the most important guys that you feel need to come back in order to keep this thing going?
It's definitely Emmett. I love the idea of Nate coming back, even though he's not a perfect fit. Yep. He knows what Hopkins needs. He knows the system backwards and forwards, and he really did come on strong, right? Especially the second half of the season.
We saw improvement. Yeah, it feels like the teaching of Wyken Jones is starting to really take shape for him. And that's why I'm kind of wondering if he's looking at the last couple weeks before the season ended and the tournament and kind of wondering, man, I really made some big steps. I'm wondering what I could look like a year from now.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's got to be intriguing to him.
Absolutely. And this is a good clearly, Hopkins has a lot of trust in him.
Yeah.
Bringing him back, I think, is definitely an answer.
Right.
It would be a real important part of this. The two biggest jumps that need to be made are from Cole Bajema and P.J. Fuller.
Yeah.
So those are, if we're looking just purely from what's there right now, those are the guys that it's going to be critical for them to take big steps next year, for them to have any hope of being consistently competitive.
Right.
Right. And I don't know what they do with Bay. I don't know if he comes back or not. Clearly, I think his ceiling is what it is, right?
Yeah.
I think we've established that. But he is an extremely high-level defender. And, in Hopkins' system, that's very important. So I'm not discounting him coming back either and playing a key role.
Right.
As long as it's not at the expense of developing somebody who has a bright future and a high ceiling within the program, over the next 2 or 3 years.
Right. And you mentioned the three incoming guys, Corin Johnson, Keon Minifield, Tyler Linhart. I mean, all project guys.
Yeah.
Although, I think Minifield could be a guy that could come in and score, maybe like a Williams Goss or a Sahonis. I don't know what you see in him necessarily, but it feels like of the three guys, he's the one that might be the most ready to try and contribute.
Mm-hmm. Well, he definitely has some electric skills. He's a dynamic athlete. And can put up big numbers, at least did on the AAU circuit, on the EYBL.
Yeah.
I think he scored like 30-some-odd, like close to 40 points in the state championship game back in Detroit. So there's obviously some upside there. Can he come in and handle the other facets of the game? And Hopkins' really complex defensive system. And I guess more importantly, how long does that take? Do they eliminate themselves from any kind of contention for the postseason in the first 2 months of the season while they're getting these guys to figure it out?
Right.
So that would be my bigger concern heading it, the way that they constructed the team last season and how I think they're going to have to construct it again this season.
Right.
That's my concern.
Right. Because I think we're in kind of an agreement that the non-conference is where they lost any possibility.
It was over. It was over before it ever started.
You can't lose to Northern Illinois and Grand Canyon and some of these other teams to be able to do that. Now, you lose to a Wyoming, for instance, but Wyoming's in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's... You don't want to lose to those guys, and obviously if you beat them, that's a resume builder, but not having any Tier 1 wins is really kind of crushing for them. And that's the point. I guess the question is, how quickly can you see this team hitting the ground running with the current pieces that they have, and what you say, obviously they would need a point guard. That's clearly a portal type of thing.
Right now, your boat has no rudder currently.
Yeah, and even if Nate Roberts does come back, you would still assume... Because obviously Langston Wilson will be back, but he really is more of a stretch guy.
Yeah, he is.
Jackson Grant's more of a stretch
fours,
guy. It feels like they need another guy. I know, Kep Nang from Oregon is a guy that people have talked a little bit about. I don't know if Kep Nang's the answer, but a Kep Nang type player, body-wise and stuff, feels like, are you in agreement?
That's the guy that fits to me.
Yeah.
But is that guy available?
Yeah.
Right? Because that guy's probably looking at bigger schools, for his future opportunities, right? I mean, honestly, if we're Oregon to Washington, where the two programs are at right now, you're taking a pretty big step backwards.
Right.
Right? So I don't feel like that's very logical. I think more likely you're looking at, I saw like a guy like Nick Lynch just hit the portal. To me, bigs are highly coveted, so that's probably the type of guy that they have access to.
Right.
Realistically.
Yeah. Well, it is going to be interesting to see what kind of talks that they have with these players now, because I think that there's going to be some where they're going to be really intrigued, and then there's some where they're going to be like, this is the requirement and it's our way or the highway. Mm-hmm. With a couple of those guys for sure. Ultimately, I guess maybe I'm looking for a quick projection based on what they did this year. What do you think they're capable of doing next year if they get the right pieces?
If they get a seasoned, experienced point guard and they need more scoring punch on the wing, whether that's from Bajima, Fuller, or a transfer, or
right,
you know, or Sammy maybe. And they've obviously got to either bring back Nate or find someone else in that role. So those are key pieces.
Right.
That has to happen
for
them to be competitive even.
Right.
Right. Otherwise, you're talking of probably a significant step backwards.
Right.
So maybe, you know, on the upside, they're probably about the same as this year, maybe 12, 13 wins.
Right.
Realistically.
You're talking about in league?
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
You're talking about 12, 13 wins total? They were 17 and 15 this year.
Yeah. That's
so
what
you
I'm
think
saying.
They're gonna, they're
gonna take a step back.
Okay.
There's no way they're gonna do that again. They're not gonna win 17 games again.
And you're really accounting that pretty much just because they can't find another Terrell Brown.
No, that guy was, you know, he's a once in a decade type of talent.
I believe he's a once in a decade talent in terms of how he did his scoring.
Well, I don't feel like there's another elite Seattle guy out there who's in his fifth year ready to transfer back home to, you know, win conference MVPs.
Do you think that's the only way it works? They have to get a guy from Seattle?
No. But I think that's to get a guy who's capable of overachieving the way Terrell did.
Right.
Yeah. That's otherwise, that guy's going to Kentucky.
Right.
Or Kansas or somewhere
like
where
a,
he
like
can
a Tari,
go. And,
like a Tari Eason.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a terrible, awful, great example.
Well, too soon?
Too soon? Okay. Too soon. Too soon.
Well, yeah. Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
I guess one of the other questions I had for you is, do you feel like, because it felt like over the course of the season, they made some huge strides defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like it wasn't just as much as the players got it, but they also made some adjustments schematically with kind of that matching man mm-hmm. and some of the other things where it started in zone and then it would mm-hmm. match out. Do you feel like Hawkins now has a better idea of not just the kind of defense that'll work based on the zone as the base, but also the personnel that has to fit? Because ultimately my feeling is, the reason he got off the track was because he didn't recruit to the system.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like his everything is defense first for him, mm-hmm. as you've rightly pointed out. He just has to recruit to it.
Yeah. Well, I'd say I agree with you, but if you look at least the dimensions of the guys coming in, they're small guards.
Yeah.
Right? So...
And Linhart's more like a Bajima type.
Right.
So, but he could play up top. He could,
maybe.
Because he did play Cole up in the front, and,
yep.
and he's got his length. If you could play, but you're right, the guards are not big guards.
Right, and they're good defensive guards.
Right.
But they're like 6'1".
Right.
Right? And I didn't get to see Kings enough. I don't know how Tyler is. I don't know defensively where he comes in, at what level. But 1A guards, typically, even Kispert came in and he struggled.
Right.
And he's not Kispert.
Yeah.
So, I think that's, expecting any of those three to come in and, like, even tread water at the defensive level we had last season, impossible.
Just
forget about it.
Right.
So, yes, I think Hopkins has a better understanding of how this whole thing works now and the players that fit his system.
Right.
But I don't know that he recruited that. He did that last spring.
Yeah.
But I don't think this time around I don't see the same blueprint.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's probably a little bit concerning to me.
Since we don't know, obviously, the futures of Bay and Roberts and some of those guys yet, we expect Sorn to probably graduate mm-hmm. and go on. Of the guys that we haven't talked about, so we've talked about Fuller and Matthews. Those guys need mm-hmm. to step up, obviously, and be a big part of next year's team. When we talk about guys like Jackson Grant or REB, mm-hmm. some of these kids, who are the ones that you feel are getting a lot closer to where they need to be?
Well, we didn't see either of those guys, right, during the season.
Yeah.
Once Jackson got COVID, that was it. So,
yeah.
We don't know what to expect. They all kind of play. All those guys are kind of fours, right? Including Langston. So all that upside is in the one position.
Yeah.
And I don't know that any of them are the answer yet.
Right.
Right? So that's a problem.
Right.
Because none of them's a clear Pac-12 starter next season.
Right.
For sure.
It's funny because you looked at REB, and of course, everyone, I wrote the story on it when he first committed. And we talked about one of the reasons he wanted to come to Washington in the Pac-12 was because there were players at Washington State and Oregon State from the same area that were having a lot of success, like Abagidi and some of these guys. And you just don't see that necessarily with mm-hmm. him. It doesn't feel like he's that kind of guy.
No, I, and again, I haven't seen enough of him yet, but rarely are those guys instant answers, right? It's probably, you know, this year, if they get 10 minutes, 12 minutes a game out of him, great. That's probably what you're looking for. And you're looking up, you know, for him to ramp towards his junior season probably where he can make a real impact.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of this roster.
Well, Beach, I was hoping that we were going to give people a little bit more optimism.
Dude, this, I don't know what
in this season-ending podcast. Well, especially the way the season ended. It just feels like it felt like the USC game was kind of a microcosm for the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
Like they ramped it up. They got were kind of in a position where they could have tasted a little bit of success, and then they lost a key component. Like they lost Roberts when he fouled out, and then everything just kind of fell apart, and they could not find a plan B in order to be, you know, in order to be able to adapt and not just survive but thrive. And ultimately, I think that's kind of the difference with this group, is that I think everyone loved to watch them play. I think everyone really loved how exciting they were to play at times, but they were really frustrating to watch as well, especially on the offensive end, because they couldn't find that complimentary shooter to go with Terrell Brown.
And that was a big part of it. It's hard to, you know, earn a lot of assists when your guys are shooting, you know, 31% from three.
Right.
So Washington really needs to, you know, take a fairly significant jump in that way to even just to compete consistently in Pac-12. You've got to get into that 35-plus percent team three-point percentage, or you're not going to be a top, you know, upper-half team in the conference system.
And I wasn't and maybe I'm wrong on this, but when I, you know, Hopkins has talked a lot about this. When you take those threes and he wants to see the wide open, the good looks, the ones that he doesn't mind those guys taking instead of the contested end of shot clock type stuff. And I didn't get the sense that those were the shots that were being taken. I thought the shots, by and large, that were being taken were good shots, you know, based on whether it was Brown driving in dishes.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, and it's just, you're right. And that is ultimately the hardest part, because I can remember a number of games at Alaska Airlines Arena today or where you had them on the verge of just getting this place to erupt. And it just never, very rarely happened. You know, whether it was, you know, Bay had an open three, or Bajma had an open three, or Davis had an open three, or one of those guys, Emmett, or one of those guys, and it just never, ever happened. And that was the really disappointing part, because they just felt like they kept getting to the top, close to the top of the mountain, and then it's just, ugh. And I think ultimately that's maybe the story of the season.
Well, and that's for that reason. I mean, honestly, I thought they were going to be – I thought they were built to win in the conference tournament. And had they gotten past USC, I was liking their chances just because they're so hard to game plan against on short notice, even with Arizona and UCLA success against them. I thought we were going to be a tough out.
And that was crazy, because the entire tournament was chalk except for one game. And that was that 8-9 game, which is never a chalk game anyways. That's always a full-on toss-up. I think it's Stanford. I don't remember who the 8 team was. Who'd they beat? I can't remember. But it was the classic 8-9 matchup. So it's just, ultimately, I feel, my personal opinion, is that was a pretty satisfying year when compared to last year.
Yeah, definitely.
And it really, I feel like it really did set the foundation and the base, but it also set the base expectation. And that's the thing. It's like, I do get the sense that even if you don't feel like they can get to a tournament next year, that will spell the difference between whether or not Mike Hopkins stays or goes.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they've got to win 18-19 games for anybody to feel like to even a suggestion that he should still be around at the end of next season. And furthermore, that they got to be recruiting, and you got to see more talent coming in the funnel, because they can't sustain bringing in three-star guys. You're not going to win in the Pac-12 winning, you know, bringing in three-star guys, period. And that's their Washington went back to that. So I've got concerns. I wish I could be more excited.
What about the idea that, you know, guys on the outside look at Terrell Brown and the way that the coaches can pitch that as, like, you could be the next Terrell Brown. You could be our featured scorer, and you can do the same types of things.
Well, that, I guess that would be the argument you'd make for Corin Johnson, because they have kind of similar attributes. You know, Corin's a bit more of a shooter, but he's not an electrifying athlete by any stretch. He's a good three-point shooter, but he's good at getting to the rim.
I'm talking about portal.
Yeah.
Talking about finding...
Oh, there's a mountain of playing time available for anyone who wants, you know, who's good enough to be here and do it. But it's, again, the competition for these elite portal guys is fierce. And you don't have a bunch of in-house Seattle guys that are dying to come back home to finish, right? Or maybe you do. I just
Well, you mentioned Nick Lynch is like one of the main ones that we've already seen.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen enough of him to know whether he's grown into a legitimate
five. He's a tank.
He's
like a Sam Timmons type.
So, but he's a legitimate five.
Oh, for sure. He's 255 pounds, 6'11".
Yeah.
So he's a tank. But I don't know if that even fits Hopkins.
Right. Right.
I think he could play a role and do, you know, play 15 minutes a game.
Right.
And, you know, he's a big, strong guy.
Well, you know, if they do play the zone predominantly, if they're going to stick with their base like they usually do, he could certainly be a rim protector.
But he's not he's not, though, is the problem. He's not a shot blocker at all.
Okay.
That's not what he does.
Okay.
He's got some solid offensive skills. His feet are a little on the slow side. He can shoot a little bit. But I think as a complement or a backup to Nate, that's probably a pretty good solution. That's, you know, for 12 to 14 minutes a game.
Okay.
Probably use him.
Okay. So to wrap this thing up, what do you have any final thoughts? Do you is there anything else that's kind of gnawing at you, or whether it's lost blown expectations or like that?
No, where I feel for Will and Quincy, because I want so badly, everyone in this town wants so badly for those guys to succeed in the roles they're in and to grow their careers. And, you know, I think there are a ton of people that want to see Will ultimately, you know, at the helm at Washington, right? But they need success at this point, right? They're kind of being dragged down by the head guy, or, you know, and if you're making change anyway, that to me is the thing that kind of keeps me up a little bit more.
Yeah.
Is when you've got those guys that are so critical and been such big parts of the program.
Yeah.
I don't want to see those guys disappear.
Yeah, it's interesting for me because I think that is true, and certainly I think there's made some strides there. And obviously Quincy's still finding his footing.
Totally.
I mean, this is his first, you know,
yep,
job at that level, and he's growing into it. And obviously I think he's – the recruiting, the offseason stuff, I think is one of the big reasons we were really hopeful that he would hit the ground running strong. And I think we're going to see that hopefully this summer.
I hope so.
You know, the biggest regret I have for a guy is Dejon Davis.
Yeah.
I really feel for Dejon, especially how the season ended for him. Overall, I was really struck by where his offense went.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it just disappeared, but it did. But you still can't take away from his defense. And he had Matisse Thybulle type moments for this team. And, I mean, that kind of an impact.
He did.
He really did.
Yep.
And that's why I feel like that injury was such a hammer blow. And I feel, on the one hand, I think it was great for the team to bounce back and still finish the way that they did without him.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you're left with a sense of wondering what could have been if he had been 100% healthy and really contributing to this team the way that I know Hopkins feels like he could have.
Well, you know, even when they were kids, when they were younger, and it was Terrell at running point, who was totally unheralded and discredited,
because
all the attention went to Dejon Davis and to Jalen Noel, and really, I think we now see where a lot of that engine, you know, who drove that car,
right?
But they struggled nationally. Those three guys, as great as they are, really struggled, and so part of me wasn't all that surprised to see that at this level, those guys together struggled again. Just because I don't think their skills are necessarily complementary as good as they are. I'm with you because Dejon's awesome. He's the best kid. And, you know, he's really a joy to watch. And to see the way he just would get dinged up, I'm bummed it didn't, you know, end better for that guy, especially.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, for sure. I just, it would have been nice for him to finish the way that I know he would have wanted to. But the last thing I'll leave the pod with is that according to Kim, who was down in Vegas and was close to these guys and really kind of followed what was going on game to game, it sounds like that this team was absolutely crushed after what happened with USC at the end.
I believe it.
And the locker room, it was really tough.
I believe it.
Because of, I think of how close these guys have gotten and how tight everyone has been. And I'm wondering how close they're going to hold that feeling in when it comes to using it as fuel to push them to try to get a tournament spot, whether it's NIT or NCAA, for next season. I'm wondering what you think about that.
Well, so even if you know, judging by the Twitters and message boards, fans really got behind the hometown guys.
Yeah.
And they played like they were inspired to play for these fans, right? So there was a very, to me, it was very synergistic that between fans and that specific group of guys. I don't see that same connection to next year's team, even though you got a Garfield kid coming in, which is always a big deal.
Well, you still have Emmett and PJ.
You still got Emmett and PJ, but I think you had a special, you had a really special group this year. And so I would love to see them sustain that momentum, but at the same time, they got to do something to get people excited again. Because if they go out and lose, you know, two of their first, you know, four games, and all of a sudden people are like, oh, the wheels are already falling off. And then you don't have a Terrell Brown to hold it all together. So
ultimately, you think that as exciting and as special as this particular group was to watch and see play, you don't think it's going to be enough to keep the interest going for the general fan?
Because I think they're going to take a pretty big step back.
Okay.
And, I mean, they're not going to – I don't think there's any scenario where they're as bad as they were 2 years ago.
Right.
Which was almost disastrous for the program.
Yeah.
I mean, it was – They made lemonade out of lemons. But they made the best lemonade they could have that situation.
Let's put it this way. Instead of tying for fifth, you think they're probably going to be like an eighth or ninth or something like that.
I think, you know, they'll finish ahead of Oregon State. But who's the guy? Until there's a rudder, you can't even project them.
That's the crazy thing. You've got Oregon State who goes from an Elite Eight to now being dead last.
Yep.
I mean, did anybody see that coming? I mean, that just it's funny how things can change. And obviously we're seeing the examples of guys who go backwards like that, but we're not really – I don't know if people are talking as much about the gains that Washington made.
Yeah. Well, I think because gains is relative. Like Washington's not a – how many wins did they win 2 years ago?
They had five total wins and four conference wins.
So unless you're associating Washington with a five-win team, then, you know – what's the difference between 12 and 17 games, right? That they're all, those are losing seasons in the Pac-12, right? Those are not acceptable results. No program is going to be okay with 12 to 17 wins. Okay. It's not okay. And it's certainly not okay at Washington where the standard is a lot higher. So, you know, I hope that they win double digits next year. It's going to depend on who they get, probably a point guard.
Okay. Well, perfect. I appreciate it, Beach. Thank you so much for your candid thoughts, as always.
Yeah, sorry I'm not more.
It's okay. Hey, I asked for them, we got them, and I know fans will appreciate the unvarnished look at kind of how you see the crystal ball for the future is. So for Aaron Beach, our head of hoops, this is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com. Go Dogs.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.